everybody. Welcome back to No More Silos, your cultural Christianity podcast. My name is Erica, and this is my podcast. Welcome back. Thank you so much for listening. I am super excited when I check the stats for the podcast on our hosting site and see that there are folks from all over the United States and around the world listening. And it's still not a whole lot of you, but it's growing. And that's so exciting. So again, my heartfelt thanks for joining me as I go on this journey of looking at how we silo off information in our culture and in the way that we disciple others. So we teach the way that we teach people about Jesus. So this week I was looking at the calendar and I realized, oh, wait, I can't talk about what I was going to talk about. So which was actually biblical womanhood. And also I've got to do another episode about how we got the Bible because I still have to talk about translations. But I looked at the calendar and realized it is 4th of July weekend. And while that's a great cookout weekend, something else I noticed when I looked at the calendar is this year, 4th of July falls on a Sunday. Now, why does that matter? Normally, I really wouldn't pay that much attention to it. 4th of July in the last few years for me has lost a little bit of its edge from when I was younger. And really, even then, I was just really focused on the cookouts. So I guess I'm still kind of just focused on the cookouts. But this year, there's a lot that has been going on. Number one, Juneteenth is an actual federal holiday now. Can we get a round of applause for that, right? So Juneteenth, a couple of weeks ago, kind of extends this Independence Day celebration because now I feel like, as an African American, I feel like it's more inclusive because we're recognizing when everybody got freedom. But really, even then, with Juneteenth and the 13th Amendment, that freed the enslaved Africans. However, we're excited about celebrating that, but women still didn't have the right to vote for quite some time after, beyond even that. So we are still experiencing little bursts of freedom layered on top of independence, layered on top of Juneteenth. So we total win in the last couple of weeks with Juneteenth as a federal holiday, recognizing that. Weirdness, I think, is the best way to describe it from a Christian standpoint. No More Silos is all about cultural Christianity, right? We are celebrating American independence, our big national holiday, on a Sunday this year. How many American churches are going to sing the Star Spangled Banner during their service? How many are going to sing America the Beautiful or sing some other independence-themed song that is totally Christian nationalism and not really about Jesus? And that saddens me, quite frankly. It really does. I know I sound probably a little excited about that just because it's kind of weird and it gives me something to talk about today. But really, it is really sad because what happens in spaces where that happens is that the people for whom the Declaration of Independence did not include and kind of feel left out of the party. It's hard to celebrate something that didn't include your ancestors. It's hard to celebrate at that same level. Yes, I'm proud to be an American. I'm really happy that I was born here and not elsewhere. You know, if I had to have a choice, but I really didn't have a choice. This is where I was born. So it is what it is. But the thing about 4th of July weekend, and this is what really caused me to kind of interrupt my regularly scheduled programming with a special 4th of July, No More Silos, is that there's so many things wrapped up, layered into how we celebrate the 4th of July and what we even know about the 4th of July, not only from a church history standpoint, but just historical American history in the first place. And since there are folks all over the United States right now shutting down American history, hey, I feel compelled to to share a few tidbits with you today. One thing I want to mention has to do, because we've been talking this season in season two of No More Silos about discipleship and how sometimes we sabotage our own discipleship efforts in the Western church because we are not as familiar about history, because we're not familiar with some of the backstories about how things came to be. So the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Independence Day and celebrating the beginning of the United States as a nation, I think about the Slave Bible. Now, I think I've talked about the Slave Bible before, but for those of us who may have missed that episode, or maybe I didn't talk about it in a whole lot of detail, it is on display in Washington, D.C. It is shared. The copy that they have is owned by Fisk University. However, it's on loan to the Smithsonian, and the African American Museum, Smithsonian Museum, has it on display. But when I was in D.C. a couple of years ago with my husband and children, we actually saw it on display, a huge exhibit at the Museum of the Bible in D.C. And if you're really interested into like all things Christian and Bible, the Museum of the Bible in D.C. is actually a really fun place to visit with your family. It's got great stuff for kids. And I don't know, I just totally nerded out in there. Anyway, the Slave Bible, if you're not familiar with it, is a copy of the Old and New Testament with everything having to do with freedom conveniently missing, which means almost the entire book of Exodus is missing. The Slave Bible has a lot of Ephesians and Galatians missing. Why? Because the Christian missionaries who felt it was important to proselytize to the enslaved Africans in the Caribbean and United States in the English language decided that it was probably dangerous to use the whole Bible. And so they only let them see part of it. Now, that is a problem. Why is it a problem? It's a problem for discipleship, because you can't disciple somebody without giving them the whole truth, first of all. Second, it taught the enslaved African communities not quite the gospel. It gave them a false representation of the gospel. And so that's the problem with the Slave Bible. So if you look that up, you can read all about it. There's a few videos on YouTube that can take you through it as well. So what other silos are hanging out in the 4th of July weekend, American Independence Day, where we as Americans celebrate our independence from Great Britain, the birth of our country and freedom? Well, a few things jump out at me. A few other things jump out at me besides the Slave Bible. One is being a woman and being a black woman in particular that, well, hey, guess what? Black people weren't free on the 4th of July. We didn't get our Independence Day then. But hey, we've got Juneteenth now, so we've got that. We weren't included in the Declaration of Independence when it said, we the people. Women were not even included, really, because it says, talks about men. Now, we like to say, oh, they meant universal men, using men as to include inclusive of both genders. But guess who didn't have the right to vote in 1776? You got it. You guessed it. Women. So we're not actually included in that. By the way, women didn't have the right to vote. They didn't have the right to own property if they were married, so it technically belonged to their husbands. The silos show in how we are taught about Independence Day in school. I was taught virtually nothing about the context of when all this happened as it regarded women specifically. In school, I learned that Crispus Attucks, a black man, an African descent, I believe he might have been born, they believe, in Haiti or Dominican Republic and was living in Boston, in the Boston area. But he was a black man who was the first to die in the initial battle of the Revolutionary War. And so my kids have a book about him. I learned about him in school, but probably not till high school, though. But in any event, I learned about Crispus Attucks, a black man who was the first to die in the initial battle and in the Revolutionary War, and we celebrate that. But no one mentioned that he was fighting for freedom that others like him would not experience for generations. Another silo that's often looked in is the legend of foundational myth that this country was founded as a Christian nation, to be uniquely a city on the hill, and religious freedom, and the King of England was not saved like us. The ideal that we needed to separate church from state or government control and oversight as part of the myth and that legend. And all of that gets conflated into the ways that we celebrate the 4th of July, Independence Day, in our churches in America, because we're stuck on, oh, we were founded as a Christian nation. But actually, it's well documented that Thomas Jefferson and many of the founding fathers were Freemasons, which is kind of inconsistent with Christianity, but I'll let you look that up on Google on your own. I will tell you this, though. Looking up Freemasonry on Google is a rabbit hole, so I hope you have some time. It's also well documented that Thomas Jefferson did not seem to believe in the supernatural elements of Christianity, as he took an X-Acto knife to his Bible, and that's also now on display in a museum in D.C., to remove the parts he didn't quite agree with. I talk about this at length in, I believe, the episode about American civil religion or the one, yeah, I think it's the one about American civil religion. Anyway, Ben Franklin, he was kind of hedonistic. History Channel has done documentaries on this. Look up his travels to France and how he spent his time while he was there as an ambassador for the United States in the early years of our country. So in many of the mainline Protestant denominations that were active during the revolutionary time frame, to become a member of the church, you simply had to be born into it. Your parents were members, therefore you were. Being a member of the local church was part of being a good citizen. In other words, it was expected. It was social. And the major theologians of the time were also slaveholders. So there's that. Jonathan Edwards. They talk about him a lot. When I was in seminary, I went to a Baptist seminary, and Jonathan Edwards is their guy, and I had to read about that. And it's all cool, right? But how he was able to fix in his mind, or justify in his mind, being a slaveholder and write these theological treatises, I don't know. I'm genuinely baffled by that. But the part of the mythology that strikes me as the untold silo of information is the part about separation of church and state, which is ironic considering right now in our current social context in the United States, we have so many people who think that we, A, need to go back to this Christian nationalism that we had, but that's not separating church from state. People who want to push their religious ideals on others in the name of religious freedom. Well, that's not religious freedom if I'm telling you how to be religious. The untold silo of information about separation of church and state kind of wraps around this idea of divine right. Let me explain. Divine right was an idea for that was in play, a philosophy in European monarchies. What it basically meant is that they believed that that the king or queen was there because God put them there. And they ruled generally in that authority. And if they were Roman Catholic, if it was a Roman Catholic country, they might have the caveat that the Pope put you in power and your allegiance was to the Pope in Rome. But since this time in the late 1700s, England had already broken away from Rome. They had their own Protestant revolution and reformation in England. And so the King of England was head of the Church of England, which is the Anglican Church, is what we know it now. And so the whole Pope thing didn't apply to them. But part of our mythology is that we're separating church and state because we didn't like that church and state was conflated in the European monarchy model. But the other thing that was interesting about that is the fact that we just didn't like the monarchy in general. But I'll get to that in just a second. The founding fathers believed that the government should not be synonymous with the leader of the country. If you watch The Crown on Netflix, you saw this play out in Queen Elizabeth's dilemma in season one with her sister wanting to marry a divorced guy, and that wasn't allowed by the church, and the queen is the head of the church, and so there she was. Therefore, she was in a pickle, right? Because she's like, well, this kind of goes against my beliefs. And her sister's looking at her going, yeah, but you're the one in charge. You can make a change. That didn't really work out. But you get the idea that this is something that over time, this is their tradition. So far, all of this makes sense. You've got divine right. The kings and queens of Europe believe that God put them in place, a la King David in the Bible, right? That they were there because they were supposed to be there, and they ruled in that kind of, with that level of authority. Here, we don't want the leaders of the new country that's being created to dictate doctrine. However, in our current view of this mythology, we have Christian nationalism. So it's a little confusing because we've made the King of England at the time, George III, to be a bad guy. We've made George III to be out to be a bad guy. And we see that in the play Hamilton, in the musical Hamilton, which is probably one of the funniest songs in the show. But it's a caricature of what the historical record says about King George III. So, King George III, it makes sense that the Patriots wanted to believe that he was the bad guy, because he was made out to be a tyrant. And I'm not here to debate whether he was or he wasn't. It's all about perspective. Obviously, the colonists felt like they were being overtaxed, and you got the Boston Tea Party. Obviously, they felt that they were being treated unfairly. And in that environment, felt that it made sense to revolt. And these things happen all over the world all the time. People have their reasons. So I'm not here to debate those details. But the thing that I am here to question, that I look at as a silo, I look at as a lack of information or being able to see the bigger picture, is that in our mythology, our founding mythology about how we're so Christian, is that King George was not believed to be Christian too. At least that's the way we make him out. Now, Christian nationalism is actually antithetical to this idea of separating faith from politics, from our founding fathers. Christian nationalism actually is supportive of anti-democratic ideals. Where did we see that recently? January 6th. And we are seeing that play out now on CNN and on Fox News today. What we saw on January 6th is not unlike the Boston Tea Party, in a sense, because, or at least that's how they felt that they were. And there were symbolic flags that had symbols from the revolutionary times on them. So all of that nationalism or Christian nationalism, I genuinely believe that the people who made the run on the Capitol, even though it was seditious, treasonous, illegal, not a great idea, dangerous, all of the above, but it was Christian nationalism front and center. But let's talk a minute about King Jesus. And I'll bring this all back to King George in a moment. One of the Winans a few years ago, probably 20 years ago, had a song about King Jesus. In the Black church tradition, we seem to be culturally okay with the idea of King Jesus. Jesus is Lord means he is sovereign over your life. All authority is with Jesus. He says this in the Gospels, by the way, after his resurrection. All of my decisions are made through the filter of what would Jesus do. What does the American church think of King Jesus? We sing songs, but I'm not sure we understand what they mean. Why is this? Are we as Americans anti-monarchy? Well, in a word, yes, because we're a democratic republic. We believe in representation of our government officials from the population, but not for the reason that we might think. What are the consequences of the American rejection of the European monarchs on Christianity? Well, I think that one of the consequences is that because we have said King George was a tyrant and he was this bad guy, but he's actually the head of the Church of England. And then we go into this whole spiel about church being separated from state, which makes sense. But what if our problem in the U.S. with Jesus is that we have a problem with monarchy in general? You see, as Americans, we believe in pull yourself up by your bootstraps, independence from with the individual at play, that we're all in it for yourselves. And I've been looking into King George III of England. He was a monarch. He was the monarch of Great Britain when America declared our independence. He ruled under the philosophy of divine right. He also lost most of his power to Parliament. Power never regained by the monarchy again. That's why Queen Elizabeth is more of a figurehead now as opposed to an official government entity. He is portrayed in American history as a tyrant, but the taxes levied on the colonies were put in place by Parliament and not by King George. And then we turn around and we modeled our Congress after Parliament. Parliament in Great Britain and in other countries, but in Great Britain in particular, is made up of two houses, just like ours, House of Lords and House of Commons. In a nutshell, the Lords were land-owning men with ties to royalty and they had titles. The House of Commons were the merchant class, still men only, but not with titles or a blood or marriage connection to royalty. U.S. senators, comparatively speaking, were required to be landowners until sometime in the early 20th century. I think in the 1920s, that changed. The House of Representatives did not have this requirement, and their number is based off of population of people of the state, off the population of the people in the state. So here's my side note for you, silo side note. This is why we had the 3/5 compromise, so that the southern states could up their numbers for representatives. The enslaved Africans counted as 3/5 of a person. This had to do with, because the population wasn't just the population of the state, but the population of people who were considered citizens of the state. Also related to this is why there's a North and South Dakota. More senators, because you can have 2 senators per state, but back to the British. The British Parliament outlawed the slave trade in the early 1800s, not long after our independence. So here's your homework. Look up the definitions for democratic socialism, capitalism, oligarchy, monarchy. Capitalism doesn't thrive in a monarchy. The Patriots took issue with the taxes the British government levied on their capitalist economic efforts. They were losing money on it. Again, not here to debate whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, but that's really more of the truth behind the story. It was about economics. So why were the taxes a problem? Well, that part, again, I'm not an economist. I'm more of a history nerd. But here are the facts. About 50% of the colonists in the 13 colonies were what they called at the time loyalists. So did the Americans just simply outmaneuver the British through familiarity with the terrain and guerrilla tactics, or the corrupt British troops may have helped? But it was about local rule. There was part of it was the economy, and part of it was local rule, which is an issue that's happening now that we see now in school boards and local communities all over the United States. It's the states' rights versus federal rights that have been going on since the inception of the United States, since we were first became a country. And so that local rule morphed into states' rights. And if 50% of the colonists were loyalists, in other words, they were okay with being British citizens, then it looks a lot like our politics today, where it's evenly split politically, right? So here's the thing. Now I'm wondering, as I look back on history, did this all lay the foundation for our cultural inability to follow King Jesus? Jesus as Lord, Jesus as sovereign in our lives, following what Jesus commanded us to do instead of what we think we need to do or what we want to do. Because we have taught for generations that monarchy is bad and democracy is good, which I agree with, but I think we made it so black and white that we are unable to connect with the biblical authority of King Jesus in our lives, so we consistently live out the American dream as a dream of rebellion against authority. I can do all this by myself, pull myself up by my bootstraps, none of which is in the New Testament. The New Testament believers were all about community, helping one another, loving one another, demonstrating their love for God through their love for one another. We witness this indictment of a king acting like a king. He presumed he got his authority from God, and he made decisions accordingly. However, during his reign, King George III gave up most of his political and governing authority to Parliament. As a man, history records that he was a man of great faith in God, who took his role as head of the Church of England seriously. In fact, so seriously that when the Prince of Wales, who eventually became King George IV, was out philandering about and living all unholy-like, he was really upset with his son. Now, later in his life, he did have some mental, King George III did have some mental health issues, but I believe, if I have the timeline correctly, those were not issues during the time that of the Revolutionary War. So in a sense, what was happening, the decisions being made by Parliament were not necessarily decisions being made by King George and being executed by Parliament, but actually that he became the figurehead for the rebellion. And he took his role as head of the church seriously, like we see Queen Elizabeth do in The Crown. Now, again, that's fictional, but I think that that's probably pretty based on truth. In his speech on the subject of the 4th of July, Frederick Douglass asks about the inconsistency he saw in the application of freedom. I posted a link to a short snippet or quote from his speech on Instagram the other day. Our Instagram is Cultural Christianity, and so you can check it out there. It's also, I think, on our Facebook page, also Cultural Christianity. Douglass famously points out that the 4th of July doesn't celebrate all of us. In fact, if you're Crispus Attucks and other African descent patriots who fought in the Revolutionary War, you got the okey-doke, because your efforts in patriotism and serving in the Revolutionary War for the war effort against Great Britain didn't pan out for you. The 4th of July or independence doesn't have the same meaning for all Americans, as we all have gained our freedom or levels of freedom at different points in American history. Should we have a holiday that celebrates the beginning of our nation? Yes, we definitely need to celebrate that. But No More Silos is about recognizing that we need to tell the whole story, not just parts of it. So I've been celebrating for the past couple of weeks. Independence Day for me started 2 weeks ago, in recognition of Juneteenth, as a lead-in to maybe, you know, it's almost like Mardi Gras. Yeah. Or Carnival, where you have a starting point, Ash Wednesday, and then you have a celebration at the end. Maybe that's what this Juneteenth to July 4th couple of weeks can morph into in time. But here's the thing. Things aren't perfect yet. But there are folks who are working really hard right now to make this country live up to being the more perfect union that the Founding Fathers seemed to set out to create. We have a long way to go, though. But as long as I've got King Jesus, I don't need nobody else. Thanks for joining me this holiday weekend. I hope you have fun at the cookout. Follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Cultural Christianity. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple or Amazon or Spotify or wherever you listen so that you don't miss an episode. And thank you once again for joining me here today on No More Silos, a podcast about cultural Christianity. And I hope that today's discussion about Frederick Douglass and the Slave Bible and King George III will help you to see how cultural Christianity has affected even our celebration of our holidays. Have a great weekend and enjoy the fun.